सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ We chant the Shanti Mantra from this Upanishad as well. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani Vak Prana Chakshuhu Shrotramatho Balamaindriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Niryakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarod Anirakarana Matsva Anirakaranam Meyastu तदात्मनि निरते यौपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते ते धर्माः ते मयि सन्तु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः लास्ट् टैम् वी सॉ द क्वेश्चन् पोस्ड् बै द डिसैपल् एण्ड् जस्ट् द क्वेश्चन् टेल्स् अस् हौ एड्वान्स्ड् द डिसैपल् इस् बिकास् ही हेज़् नाट् आस्क्ड् what is the mind? What are the functions of the sense organs? What do they do? Where did they come from? How are they created? Etc. etc. He has figured all that out. What it tells us is that all those things he has figured out. He has also figured out that the senses and the mind are inert. That also he has figured out. Because if he had not figured that out, he would have thought that the mind is the one that knows everything. That is our perception right now. So he has figured it out that it's inert, and probably that it is not the mind which is actually seeing. So therefore he has posed the question, what is it because of which the eyes can see? Kene shitam patitam preshitam manaha. As if directed by whom? As if willed by whom is the mind moving? Because he has figured out that even though he doesn't want the mind to go somewhere, the mind is running away. So that's what he's asking the question. The implied, and then of course he's also saying the pranas, how are they? Who is driving the pranas? Who is driving the speech and the eyes? So when he says mind, it includes the whole entire antakaran, subtle body, pranas, subtle body, and then speech is including the organs of action, and chakshu, the eyes, are including the organs of perception. Okay, jnanendriyas. So jnanendriyas, karmendriyas, and pranas. So gross body and subtle body. Saying there's something that is directing this. What is it? The implied meaning is there something? There is, actually, because he has asked, what is it? So there is something, but is it finite or infinite? Is it dependent or independent? Is it sentient or inert? What is it? And if it is there, then what is my relationship with it? How do I relate to it? Is it something other than me, or is it something within me? And if it is within me, then why do I not know it? That also, he doesn't know that, right? So he probably has a feeling that it probably is within me, but then I don't know it. So that is the implied meaning of the question that we saw last time. Now the guru is answering. And this is again the mystic. This verse itself will kind of tell you that it could not have been written by a human. I told you Upanishads, the Vedas are not, they're a Purusheya. So when we look at this verse itself, we will have an idea of what I had said earlier on in my first introductory lecture. Kshotrasya kshotram manaso mano yad vacho havacham sa upranasya pranaha chakshushaha chakshuhu atimuchya dhiraha Pretyasman lokad amrita bhavanti. Okay. So, what he's saying is, the preceptor, the teacher, the guru, it is the year of the year, because he has asked, what is it? So the question is being answered. What is it? It is the year of the year, the mind of the mind, the tongue of the tongue, speech of the speech, and also the life of the life, prana of the pranas, and the eye of the eye. Having abandoned the sense of self or I-ness in these and rising above sense life, the wise become immortal. I, nothing say what. So if you look at this, just the meaning, what is there, a physical ear behind the ear? Is there a physical eye behind the eye? It would be a biological freak, because if we, I mean, any, even if I don't have a medical degree, I know that there is no other eye which is behind my eye. There is no other ear which is behind my ear. There is no mind which is behind my mind. So what is he talking about? What is the guru saying? The first thing to understand is we cannot take this literally. It is not to be taken as a, there's a physical eye behind the eye. There's a physical ear behind the ear. And when he says ear, when I've told this to you before also, the first point to understand is that literal meaning cannot be taken. We have talked about literal and implied meanings. The direct meaning is where the words make sense. And in most of the Upanishadic mantras, the words are not going to make sense. So we have to take the implied meaning, because we cannot say that what the Upanishad saying is wrong. So the basis of our inquiry begins with the complete faith. It may be blind faith, let it be blind faith, but the faith has to be very firm that whatever the Upanishad has said is correct. Okay, now how do I change my understanding to understand what the Upanishad is saying? So if it is said it is the year of the year, then that is correct. Okay, so that's one thing, but not to be taken literally. Direct meaning cannot be taken, so we have to see what the implied meaning is. Then when he says year, it includes all the organs. Okay, so because there's not that much, you know, it can't go, he can't say year of the year, eye of the eye, all that, all the other sense organs are included in the year. So when he says year, it means eye, it means nose, it means tongue, and it means all the organs of perception. When he says tongue, he says speech, he's talking about speech, so it's the organs of action. So he means there is some hands behind the hands, there's legs behind the legs, all that is to be understood. Okay, and pranas behind the prana. So there is something, because the question was, there is something which is driving my pranas as well. Okay, so he has figured out that the pranas are also inert. Normally what we think is, because pranas are the indicator of life, we think, oh, when pranas are gone, the life goes away. So we think pranas is everything. That he has figured out, pranas is not everything. There is something which is driving the pranas. So there's number 2 point. Now, a little bit of grammar here. Kshotrasya kshotram. Okay, the third point to be noted in this verse is, he has not said there is Brahman. Brahman word is not used. Satchitananda word is not used. He's only using year of the year, eye of the eye, that sort of language. Okay, so no God is mentioned, no Brahman is mentioned, no pure consciousness is mentioned. It is not mentioned. Okay, so when you see kshotrasya kshotrams, for those of you who have an idea of Sanskrit grammar has these cases, you know, 1 to 7th case. And the first case is the nominative case, which represents the subject. Okay, now kshotrasya is the sixth case. Sixth case is of something. So when it says kshotra, that's why it's translated as year of the year. So kshotrasya is of the year, there is a year. Okay, this is how the graph. Now, because kshotrasya is in sixth case and kshotram is in first case, and the same thing is with manasa. Manasaha is sixth case and manaha is first case. Vacham is a second case actually, but we have to take it as vak, which is the first case. And when I say first case, nominative case, it represents the subject. So the words kshotram, manaha, and vak have to be taken as a subject, not a physical eye and a physical mind and a physical speech and all that. No. So there is what the preceptor is saying, what the guru is saying, that there is a subject behind these things which is driving these things. Because the question was preshitam and ishitam. So the will of the subject itself is driving. I told you last time also that it is not it is not a will where we are being told do this, not like that, but just the will itself acts like, you know, like a deterrent. When the students see the teacher, immediately they keep quiet. The presence of the teacher itself is a deterrent. The teacher doesn't have to say, okay, now keep quiet, I'm here. Teacher doesn't have to say that. When the teacher enters the classroom, it's like that's the will of the teacher. The teacher's entered, students have to be quiet. So this shrotra se shrotam. So what the guru is saying that there is a subject. So now let us see what this, let us see what our experience is. We are very well aware that, let's just take the example of eyes, it's the easiest. And when I say eyes, I include all the sense organs. So if I see something, first of all, an ignorant person will think that the eyes are seeing. Okay, when you think a little bit deeply, there are times when we are walking, but our mind is wandering, because that's what it is. The mind is, even though I don't want it to wander, it is wandering. So I don't see the person in front of me. And the person may say good morning or may say hello. And I'm like, suddenly, otherwise I'm jolted. I'm like, oh, sorry, I didn't see you. But my eyes were open and my eyes were on that person. And yet that person did not register. So what it tells us is that it is not actually the eyes. Of course, the image is being formed by the eyes. But unless the mind is behind the eyes, then it is not getting registered. And if things are, if they don't get registered, then they are as good as that I did not see. Right? Same with all the other organs. Okay? So then we come to understand when we think a little bit that, oh, yeah, my eyes were open. That means that eyes cannot be the final seer. There has to be the mind which is present behind the eyes, which has to be present and alert. Yeah, that's why the very good example is I can fall asleep and my eyes will be closed, but my ears are open. I will not hear the TV. If I'm watching something and I just doze off, I don't hear the TV. So the ears are open, but the reason that the TV is not heard is because the mind is now folded. So we come to know that eyes, ears cannot be the final thing. So the subject is the mind. Then is the preceptor saying that this it, that it, what is it? Is that the mind? But then when I think a little bit further, I understand that mind is inert. Why is mind inert? Because it has come from inert matter. It has also come, the eyes and ears and all the whole gross body, it has come from this elements which are inert. The elements are inert by themselves. The mind also has come from the subtle aspect of the same elements. So how can the same inert elements give rise to sentient mind? The inert elements are creating inert body. Okay, we can understand that. Inert elements giving rise to inert mind, we can understand, right? Because inert can, only inert can come out of inert. And there is somebody who is willing there also, by the will of somebody, because inert by itself cannot produce. We have not seen, I need an extra furniture in the house now, tomorrow can use couch, can you just make another couch? I've not seen that, never. Nobody has seen that, right? So inert cannot do it on its own, but I can make it happen. I can cut the table and make two tables out of it, or I can cut my couch and I can make it happen as a sentient being. So the mind is inert. If the mind is inert, can it be the final subject? Because what is the definition of inert? Inert is that which does not know its own existence as well as the existence of everything around it, right? That's why we give the example, the chair. If I sit for it for 2 hours, the chair doesn't say, get up now, your time is up. Because it's inert. It doesn't know its own existence. It also doesn't know that somebody's sitting on it. So inert, if the mind is inert, it has come from inert matter. How will it know? That means that this it that the guru is referring to is somebody other than the mind also. It's other than the eyes and it's other than the mind as well. If it is other than the mind, then it has to have properties or attributes or whatever it is different from the mind. Otherwise, it would be like the mind only. That's why we say eyes and mind is same. Why? Because they're both inert. The shape is different. Shape is different. Function may be different. But ultimately, they're both inert. But now this subject that we are saying, it's not the mind, it's something even other than the mind, then that subject has to be different. If it has to be different, then if the mind is inert, it has to be sentient. It has to be opposite. Otherwise, it will be same. If mind is inert and that is also inert, then again, it is the same. What is the difference? So the subject has to be sentient. Okay. Mind is finite or infinite? Finite. If mind is finite, that subject has to be infinite. It has to be. If it's both are finite, that's why I is also finite, mind is also finite. Therefore, no difference. But mind is finite, that has to be infinite. Mind has a form. You might think mind doesn't have a form, but understand that every thought has a form. Okay? And that's the reason, that is one of the reasons that we say that mind cannot be pure consciousness, because pure consciousness is without form. Mind is with form. So if mind is with form, the pure consciousness has to be without form. The subject has to be without form. Here he's not using the words pure consciousness, but that is what he's referring to. So I also won't say it. I shouldn't say it. So if that subject, if that it is there, which is different, it has to be sentient, it has to be infinite, because mind is finite, and it also has to be formless. Because it is formless, it can support all the forms in the mind. Please understand. At a very individual level, there is an I, right? I always feel I am, I am, I am, okay? And then I also always feel I am. Fat, I'm thin, I'm tall, I'm short, I'm happy, I'm sad. I feel that. That I is aham, but that is the small aham. Like Gurudev would say, it is the small I, which is the ego. That ego also, please understand, is formless. The small I is formless. Because it is formless, identifying with the body, it takes up the form. Because, if that small I had a form, then that form is there. Now it cannot accommodate another form. The more common example I'll give you is of the movie theater. You go for a movie. Now you go for any more. It may be an ordinary small 35 mm screen, 70 mm screen, OmniMax, IMAX, 3D. Have you ever seen any colored screen? Or is it always white? It is always white. Doesn't matter how advanced the movie is and what they're showing. The screen has to be white, because only the white screen can support all the colors. Otherwise, it cannot support. It cannot. If you have a red screen, it'll not support red color. Then I had done an interview way back on TV. I had done an interview and I asked the host, what color, because I realized that, you know, all this matters. So I said, what kind of clothes should I wear? Like, what color? He said, you cannot even have a speck of green in your sari. He told me that. I said, why? He said, my background is green. Anything green in your sari, it cannot support. So for supporting all forms, the one that is supporting has to be formless. Ego, that is why, can at one point I say I'm thin, and at another point I say I'm fat. Because now ego is becoming fat, ego is becoming thin. Ego is becoming tall, ego is becoming short. Ego is becoming happy, ego is becoming sad. It can take on any form. Identifying with the body, mind, and intellect, it takes on any form. And the reason it can take on any form is because it is itself formless. It has to be formless. Otherwise, it cannot take on that form. So if that small I is also formless, in Gurudev's words, think about the big I. The big I, the big aham, which is supporting the entire universe. How can it have a form? It cannot have a form. So this subject, the mind and the eyes, are finite, limited, inert, and objects. They are objects. They fall under the category of idam. In Upadesh Sar, when we studied, Bhagavan Ravan Maharshi said, all thoughts fall under two categories, aham and idam. Okay? And this entire world, falls under idam. That is very easy for us to understand. I can understand the computer is other than me, the printer is other than me. I can understand that. That is very easy. But when it comes to my body, then I have difficulty. Body is idam? Yes, body is idam. Mind is idam? Yes, mind is idam. That is what is being told. That there, these are also idam. And there is some aham which is different from this. This idam. Forget the world. World is very easy for us to understand. And nobody says I'm the computer. Nobody says I'm the printer. Nobody says I'm paper, I'm book. Nobody says that. If I say it, the people think I'm crazy. But when I say I'm not the body, then people say you're crazy. See, in case of the body, if I say I'm not the body, huh, what do you mean I'm not the body? You're not the body. Crazy. That's what they'll say. See how different it is. Are you the clothes on your body? No. That, of course, that even I can understand. But I'm not the body. Something is wrong. Right? So this is what is being said. So understand from our experience that the eyes are an object of my experience. How? I may not be able to, of course, in the mirror I can look. That's not the point. But in my mind, don't I know that my eyes cannot see without glasses? That my eyes are getting weak, that my eyes are getting stronger, that I cannot read without my glasses. If I see. So that is how we know that the eye is not the final subject. Because we think, oh, I is seeing the world and the computer, etc., or the room or whatever. And is I? No. Because if I is the seer, one rule about seer and seen is that the seer can never be the seen. This is the law, okay? Like law of karma, there are laws, E equals MC square. Those can never be negated. One of such laws is that the seer can never become the seen. Okay, now the eye is the seer. That's what I think, right? Eye is the seer. Array? But the seer is becoming the seen because for the mind, the eye has become the seen now. So the law cannot be falsified. So that means what? If law cannot, is not, if law stays, then the eye is not the seer. We cannot say that the law is wrong. Law is not wrong. Law is always correct. My experience is that even though my eyes see the world, my mind sees the eye. And sees the eye means not physically sees the eye, but the mind knows that the eyes are tired, the eyes are burning, the eyes are cannot see properly, cannot this thing. So therefore, as per this law, the eyes cannot be the seer, so they become the seen. Okay, then maybe the mind is the final seer. Yeah, but I also know the thoughts in my mind, right? And that I who knows the thoughts, the guru is talking about here. When he says the year of the year, when he says the mind of the mind, and the speech of the speech and the prana of the pranas, what he's talking about actually is that final seer, the final sakshi who never becomes the seen. Because that is the law. It cannot, if it becomes the seen, it becomes inert. Another law is whatever yad drisham tad jadam. This is another law, can never be changed. Whatever you see, and it includes whatever you hear, whatever you taste, whatever you touch, everything included. Okay. So whatever you see is inert. That's why we always say that what I'm looking, you might think that you're looking at life, you're actually looking at my inert body. You cannot look at my consciousness. Why? Because the consciousness in you and the consciousness in me is one and the same. How can one and the same thing look at each other? It can't. I am also looking at inert bodies, and you are also looking at my inert body. That's it. But the body is always inert. Okay? So this is the final subject that the guru is talking about in this verse. Not the mind, what is behind the mind. And that subject which can never ever become the seen. Because the minute if it becomes the seen, it's not possible. If it becomes seen, it becomes inert. Because the law kicks in. If you see it, it is inert. So you cannot see it. It is the final subject. And then what he says is, and then this final subject does not have any limitations, any form, this thing. And it is sentient. How do we know that it is sentient? Because I am, what is my experience? I can call all of you inert. Can I call myself inert? Same way, you can call me inert, that's fine. But can you say you are inert? Can any one of us say that I am inert? No. I know. Why? Because I know. I know myself. I know my surroundings. I know that I'm speaking. I know that you're listening. You know that you're listening. You know that I'm speaking. So we are all conscious. And that is the final subject that he's talking about. He has not used the word consciousness. He has not used the word Brahman. He's not used the word Satchitananda. Okay? And this itself tells us that it cannot be written by a human being. Do you know why? Because the human being, if he was writing this verse, he would have thought, "Are but if I write like this, how will people understand that I'm talking about Brahman?" The human being would have thought this. Right? There's nothing I mentioned. There is a year behind the year. What? Are you mad? People, some human was like, "Are you mad? What do you mean year behind year?" So there is no explanation. This is the language of Shruti. That is why they say it's very mystic language. That is why they say that Upanishad studies should not be taken up on your own. This is the reason. And this is the proof. This verse is one of the proofs. Many, many proofs are there. But this right here is the proof that is a Purusheya. It cannot, because the human being would have thought, that doesn't make sense. If you read it, really doesn't make sense. Okay. Then the next he's saying is, Atimucha Dhira. Dhira word we heard in Bhagavad Gita. So Dhira Purusha is a wise man. Who is a wise man? The one who gets Atimucha is release. Okay. So he gets the final release. How? Pretyasman Lokad Amrita Bhavanti, he becomes immortal. The wise man becomes immortal by releasing. Mucha is to release. So Atimucha means releasing completely. Releasing completely what? This body. Really? How do I release the body? Do I kill myself? No. What is meant here again is that by cutting off the identification with the body. How do I separate myself? Because now what is being told here is that there is this inert matter, and this inert matter is being driven by a subject. Okay? And obviously, that subject has to be something different from this inert matter. Otherwise, everything is inert. That's why we say the whole world is the same only. Shape is, sun is different and it gives light, and moon is different and it doesn't have any light, and earth is round and something else is something. But they are all inert. They're all inert. It's one and the same. It all falls under the category of idam. This, this, this. And all of them are seen. And therefore, when they are seen, they are all inert. So when it comes to the seer has to be sentient. And that final seer is this subject. So a wise person, there are very few people who realize this. That's why in chapter 7, when we did chapter 7, right? Did we do chapter 7? No, we reached 6. When we do chapter 7, that's where Bhagavan will say that among thousands and thousands of people, only hundreds aspire to know me. And out of the hundreds, only one comes to me. It's that rare to understand this, right? So here the Guru is saying, Shruti is saying, that the Dhira Purusha, the wise man, who understands that there is a subject behind all this, and then drops this identification with this inert matter. Dropping identification with this inert matter is extremely difficult, like I told you. I can drop identification with the home, with a computer, with the books, clothes, everything. I can say it is not me, it is not me. It is very easy for me to say that. But it is not easy for me to say I'm not the body. Because why? I've been conditioned like that for births and births, not just this birth. For so many births. And the funniest part is, nobody ever told me I was the body, but automatically I know I'm the body. Now the Guru is telling me I'm not the body. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I can't understand it. I don't have faith or whatever. Or I don't understand it. How come? How come I'm not the body? So this is what he's saying here, that who can know this? The one who knows this, Dhira, who can realize this? Who realizes this? A Dhira Purusha only realizes. A Dhira Purusha is a wise man. Who is a wise man? Not who has got big degrees, big money. Not that person. But the person who recognizes that there is a subject behind all this. And then he drops his identification with the body. What will happen then? He will become immortal, which means he will become one with the subject. The minute he drops identification with the body, that's why Gurudev has given the thing, attach and detach. So attach to the higher. So if he gets attached, if he gets identified with that subject, then he will drop his, and a Dhira Purusha can do that. And if he manages to do that, if anybody can manages to do that, they become immortal. Why? Because the subject is immortal. Why does he become immortal? Subject is always immortal. Right? Okay? Asmad Lokat Pretya, having left this world, and the one who realizes in this life, who becomes a Jivan Mukta, liberated by living. That's why we say realized masters, we say Jivan Mukta Purusha. Jivan Mukta Purusha means liberated by living. So in this life itself, we need to realize there are people who think that I will get liberation after I die. Okay, now that is extremely incorrect. Please understand that. After death, there is only birth. There is another birth. And we don't know which body will come. That's a different matter. But there is never liberation after death. If there is going to be any kind of liberation, it will happen while living. It has to happen while living. Only when liberation happens while the person is living, after death, there is Videha Mukti, what is known as Videha Mukti. So when he drops his body, he doesn't get another body. Okay, so that's why when it is said that having left this world, after death they become immortal, it indicates that right now he understood he has already become immortal. And after death he will not get another body. So this also, don't think that, okay, he realized this and then when he dies he will be liberated. No, he is liberated right now. Actually, the secret is that we are all already liberated right now. Very honestly, there is no bondage. It is all a false bondage. But we don't understand that. That's a different matter again. So that's why it says, even to say that I will become immortal is not correct. Because I am immortal right now. Okay? See, if I'm not immortal right now, there's nothing to become. I cannot become immortal. The only thing is I am immortal, but I don't know that I am. That is, that don't know is the problem. So as the minute I come to know, that's my knowledge. The minute I come to know this subject, the minute I come. Now, knowing the subject, please, right now, even we came to know that there is a subject, okay? Does it mean that we are liberated? No. Why? Because we know the subject as an object, actually. Do you understand? There is a subject. Okay. Other than the body. Always when we hear about it, we objectify. That is how the intellect can only objectify. The intellect is incapable of knowing the subject. Okay. This is what the guru will now say in the next verse. So now the question arises. There's no question here, huh? That we have to understand. How do we understand? From the next verse, we understand what the student must be thinking. So the student asked a question. Guru answered. There is a year of the year finished. Okay, now what? Now what? Now what? So then now the next thing comes is that the guru, Shishya says, the disciple says, how do I know it? You are saying that the wise person comes to know, and knowing that, he becomes immortal. So after he dies, he doesn't come back to the mortal world. I also want to know that. How do I know that? This is what the student is. I'm just getting over bronchitis, so just excuse me, okay?
Jai Ji. You want to take a break?
No, I'm okay. Just bear with my little bit, because with it's okay. I don't want to take a break, but I'm. Excuse me. I apologize. As long as I have a little water. Okay. So now the question arises in the mind of the disciple, because the guru said that the Dhira Purusha attains immortality. How do I attain that immortality now? Okay. So this is what now the guru is answering. Verse 3, it's page 65 in my book. Na tatra chakshur gachati, na vag gachati, na manaha, na vidmo, na vijanimo, yathait tad anushishyat, anya deva tad vidita datho, avidita dadi, iti shushruma purvesham, ye nastad vyacha chakshire. This is another proof that there is no, I told you, there is no meter. If it was written by a human, he would have made sure that somebody can read something properly, right? So this has to be read in prose. If there is a meter, excuse me, I don't know. I don't think there is for this. But anyway, now the answer is being given to this question. How do I go there? How do I reach that? The eye does not go there, Guru said right away. Eye does not go there, nor speech, nor mind. We do not know that. Now, Guru is only saying, we do not know that. Array, if Guru doesn't know, how will the disciple know? But we'll see that. We do not know how to instruct one about it. See how humble the Guru is. It is distinct from the known and above the unknown. We have heard it, so stated the preceptors who taught us that. That is one thing. So stated the preceptors who taught us that, indicating this is not my knowledge. I've told you this in even Bhagavad Gita, Bhagwan says, the wise people say, they say, you know, Bhagwan himself is not, it's Vedas, I told you, are the breath of the gods. But Bhagwan also is not taking credit. So Shruti also in this, the Guru is saying that my Guru has taught me this. So he's giving the importance of the Guru Shishya Parampara. This is very important in spiritual knowledge, that the knowledge is heard from a guru. Okay, that's why it said that just reading. This guru also, who is of course a realized master, he's saying that we don't know. This is what we have heard. So now we are telling you what we have heard. Okay, so what has this guru heard? This is the eye does not go there. When he says the eye does not go there, once again, all sense organs included, what he means is that the sense organs are a means of knowledge. And if you remember, there are six means of knowledge. Okay, direct perception is there, right? Pratyaksha praman, anumana praman, inference. There is presumption, there is comparison, there is absence, and there is shabda praman. Okay, six, we have seen this before. Now, when he says that the eye does not go there, including all the Jnanendriyas, he's negating Pratyaksha Pramana, right? Because through the Jnanendriyas, I get direct perception. Directly, I'm seeing you, right? So this, when he says the eye doesn't go there, okay, means the eye cannot know it. The eye cannot see it. Pratyaksha Pramana is completely negated. With the eye, the ears, tongue, nose, everything included. Then he says, nor the speech. Okay. Speech, including all the organs of action. So it is not something that that speech will take you. You cannot grasp it. Okay. So all the organs of action are negated. There is no use. We don't need strong. There's a next. It is. Sorry, I don't know whether it's in this or some other word. It says that strength is not required. Physical strength is not required in spiritual pursuit. Okay, strength is required in the sense to sit for meditation and all, but not like you have to be a weightlifter and all those kinds of things are not required. Okay, so when he says speech, organs of action negated, mind, he's negating inference. Because inference, okay, which is based on direct perception as well, anumana pramana, that means of knowledge, is based on the mind. The example in the scriptures is, I see smoke in the distant, coming out of the distant mountain, and I know that there is a fire. Okay, so that's where the mind is involved. Because direct perception is that I see the smoke, but the mind knows the connection between smoke and fire. And that's why I presume that there has to be a fire there somewhere. That's why the smoke is seen. Presumption also, this is inference. Inferences at the same time. Presumption is I wake up in the morning and when I see the road is wet outside, I presume that there was rain on the previous night. Okay, so by negating pratyaksha pramana and by negating inference, all the other pramanas except shabda pramana is negated. This is what is the meaning of this. Because then he says that it is we do not know, means intellect also. Mind means intellect also. So what he is doing is he's negating pratyaksha pramana, he's negating anumana pramana. Okay, when these two are negated, the other three get negated automatically, because absence also is based on pratyaksha pramana, right? If there are usually 21 people and today if there are only 20 people in the thing, then I know that one person is absent. Okay, so that's why absence is negated by that is, and then comparison is also negated, because comparison is I should see something like it. And then I can say that, oh, the example given is of a Nila guy in scriptures. Somebody said, go see a Neel guy. He said, what is a Neel guy? I don't know what a Neel guy is. He says, okay, do you know what a guy is? What a cow is? He says, yeah, cow I know. Okay, so then that cow, if it has a big lump in the throat, then that becomes a Neel guy. So look for an animal which looks like a cow. But to look for an animal means that the person has to have seen a cow before, has to know. So again, that also is negated. All right. So that way, all the first five means of knowledge get negated in these words. The eye does not go there, nor speech, nor mind. And we do not know that. We do not know that means. So what remains is only Shabda Pramana. Okay. And Shabda Pramana is only the Vedas. So we can only know that through the Shabda. But that also, when he says, we do not know that means we cannot know it as an object. When it says that, when he says that we do not know that, what the guru means is that as an object, that can never be objectified. So one can never know this as an object. All our knowledge is based on objectification. Okay, everything we know as an object, either is an object in the mind or actual object. So again, this is the difference, that this is this particular, I shouldn't say object, this particular entity, this particular factor that the disciple has asked about, what is it that is driving the senses, cannot be known as an object. Okay, now we do not know how to instruct one about it. The reason that the guru is saying this is because it is only a matter of personal experience. The student has to experience this subject personally himself. This is what Gurudev meant by, I am not a mule guru. This is exactly what he meant. We do not know. It means I cannot show you that. I can only point the way. This is what Guru, and Gurudev used to give the example of that tree. Oh, the thin, you know, the second day moon is a very thin sliver of moon. And then this person cannot see that. And he's saying, where is the moon? Where is the moon? Then the person says, okay, can you see the tree? Yes. Can you see that branch? Yes. Can you see the tip of the branch? Yes. Now move your eyes right above that tip and you will see the moon. So the guru can only take us to the tip of that tree. He cannot take us any further. It is we have to go further. and we have to experience it ourselves. This is what he means by that, because it is not, see, if it was an object, the guru can show it. If the student is asking, you know, what is the pyramids like or what is Taj Mahal like, the guru can take you there and show you, there it is. You know, this is what the Taj is, this is what this is. But it is not object. It is your own subject. It is within you, right? So you cannot see it, and I cannot show it to you. If I show you anything, it'll become inert. Because whatever is seen is inert. Now, this is not inert. This is sentient. So I cannot show it to you. I can only tell you. And what can I tell you? I don't know how to instruct. How to tell you also is difficult. Why? It is because it is distinct from the known and above the unknown. Okay? So it is different from the known and the unknown. See, there was a disciple who went to a guru, and the guru said this. He said, it cannot be known by the senses. Okay, it cannot be grasped by the hands. It cannot be this thing. So the disciple said, that means it doesn't exist. If it cannot be known by the senses, nothing like that exists. So the guru said, then there is no point you staying with me. If you're already started with the premise that there's nothing like that, then that's true. So the disciple said, okay, fine. But out of respect, he said, I should do pranams to the guru. Anyways, I came here. So he prostrates to the guru, and the guru hits him very hard on the back. So when he hits him on the back, he has pain. He says, guru, why did you do that? I've got so much pain. He says, can I see your pain? No, you can't see my pain. Okay, can I hear it? No, you can't hear my pain. Okay, let me taste it. No, you can't taste my pain. Okay, then let's smell it. No, you can't smell my pain. Yeah, then pain doesn't exist. Let me hold your pain. No, it can't hold my pain. No, then the pain doesn't exist. And the guru was, the disciple was smart enough. He said, no, I think I better stay and know what this is. There must be something. So all our things is, you know, we know this, we know that through the senses or through the mind. Sometimes we know through the mind also. Dream we know only through the mind without the senses. That is also possible. But he has already said that the mind cannot go there. So it cannot be known. So it is, because other problem is, if it does become the known, it becomes inert. So it cannot be known. Okay, fine, it cannot be known. Then it is unknown. No, it's not unknown. So what is that which is beyond known and unknown? Known is that which is manifest. Okay, what is the definition of known? When do I say I know it? I know there is a printer here because it is manifest to my eyes. There's a shape and a form and this and that, and I know the function. So I say that it is there. It is manifest to my eyes. There are certain things which are unmanifest for us also, which is what? Our own vasanas. One thing is that everybody else's mind is also unmanifest to me, right? My mind is unmanifest to you. But if I were to take my own self, then my mind also is known to me. Already we know what kind of thoughts we have or what the mind is feeling, low today, happy today, sad today, all that we know. So the mind also becomes a known factor for us. It is a known factor, right? So what is unknown for us is the vasanas. If you look in Gurudev's chart, the BMI chart, there is a V there between the Om and the BMI. So that V is the vasanas. That is unmanifest. Now, that is unknown right now. Okay? But whatever is unknown can become known. When will those vasanas become known to me? When there is some trigger outside which will create a desire in my mind. Vasanas are the birthplace of desires, okay? And they will fructify at that time when there is some sort of a trigger. Trigger has to be external. It'll be external most of the time. So what will happen is, you know, I'll hear something. Somebody will describe this great place. Now, I never felt like traveling or never felt like going. Suddenly that vasana will come up. Oh, I want to see. So that vasana will become manifest in the mind as desire. And that it will be triggered from outside. So the vasana level is unknown right now for me. But whatever is unknown will become known. Okay, can become known. I don't know so many things right now. Even I can say I don't know so many subjects physically, but you know what? I can study them and they will become known to me. Okay? So, the point here is, Guru is saying it is not known. So what he's saying is it is not an object, it is not inert, and therefore it can never be known. Okay, is it unknown? No. He says, Guru is saying it is not unknown, because whatever is unknown can become known. So if it is unknown, it is not like it will become known at a future date. That's what I told you. For me to say I will become immortal is wrong. If I say I will become immortal at a certain date and a time in the future, that means right now I'm a mortal. But even right now, I'm not a mortal. I am immortal right now. So that is why we cannot say that this is unknown. Because saying that it is unknown, that means it makes me a mortal. As the body, I'm mortal. Huh? Please understand. When I say I am not mortal, as the Supreme Self, I am not a mortal. Right now, this moment, I never was. It wasn't like, oh, before I came into the mission, I was a mortal, I was going to die and all that, my Supreme Self. And now that I came into the mission and Gurudev told me that, now I became, no. I was immortal right from day one. From yugas and kalpas, I've been immortal. So this is why it says that it is not unknown. Because unknown can become known. But it is not like mortal is becoming immortal. So that is why the Guru is saying it is beyond known and unknown both. It is not inert, which is given by the fact that known. And it is present here, right and now. Therefore, it is not unknown. The reason that it is unknown to us is because there is a veiling of ignorance. Because I am firmly established in the fact that I am jiva or I am body. Aham jivosmi. This is the, at the most maximum number of people in the world think they are body, mind and intellect. Maximum. Okay, they do not understand anything beyond the body. They think I got birth, my life started, and my life is going to end at death. Okay, so there are few of us who have come in contact with this knowledge. So now at least we think I'm jiva, I'm not the body, little bit higher than this. But even that is erroneous. Jivosmi also is erroneous. Brahmasmi is the only truth. Aham Brahmasmi is the only truth. And therefore, we cannot say that it is unknown. We cannot say. Because you see, if I say this Atma is unknown, then what does it mean? What is Atma? Aham. Me, myself, right? That means I'm saying I don't know myself. Do I ever say that? I can say, I can deny I'm knowing any one of you. I don't know you guys. Can I say that I don't know myself? I can never say that. Right? So therefore the guru is telling the disciple that it is distinct from the known and it's beyond. Distinct means here it's beyond the known and unknown. So it is not known, and if you think that it's unknown, no, that's not correct either. Beyond, okay. So, and known, I told you that they're saying. Now this whole world which I know, okay, because it's falling under known, right? Idam, everything that I know. So understand this whole world to be inert and mortal. Because if I know, it is becoming inert. So the entire world is mortal. So this subject is something other than this idam. It is aham. And if I say that I don't know aham, then there'll be a problem. There's a problem, right? I don't know myself. This is what I'm saying. Where is the problem then? Let us understand this a little bit more. Where is the problem? I do say that all of us will say, of course, I know myself very well, right? Problem is that we have an erroneous notion about this self. That is where the problem is. I know myself, but I know myself as n number of adjectives. The minute I say, who are you, I will start saying my name, my qualifications, married to so-and-so, mother of so-and-so, president of this mission, president of that mission, member of this club, member of that club, etc., 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 which are only adjectives which are relating to the body. Why am I a mother? Because my body has given birth to children. Why am I a wife? Because I have a husband. Why am I a president? Because there is a mission. So the body is the president, right? None of these are describing the real self. That is the problem. It's not that I don't know that there is Atma, but right now, my idea of Atma or my idea of Aham is misplaced. It is misplaced in the body, mind, and intellect. Okay? It needs a correction. Now, it is my mistake. How anybody else can correct it? That's why the guru is saying that we cannot help you. We cannot help you. You have made the mistake. You have to correct it yourself. I can only instruct you. I can tell you that you've made a mistake. But for correction of that mistake, you need to do it yourself. It's like I can tell you you're overweight. I can tell you that what to do to lose that weight. But you have to do it yourself. A personal trainer cannot do it for me. I need to watch what I eat. I need to exercise. I need to follow a regimen. Then I will lose weight. There's the same thing here. It's exactly the same. That there is a misplaced identity that you have done for whatever the reason may be. There is no point going into why I did it, because what's the point in now knowing why I did it? Are now you know, now you did it, now I'm telling you, now you correct it. And if you have made the mistake, only you can correct it. I cannot correct it for you. It's like nobody can take medicine for me. I'm sick, I've got bronchitis, I need to swallow the antibiotics. Nobody else can do it for me. It's exactly the same thing. So this is what the guru is saying here. That, okay. Just a few more points are there, but I will continue next time on this verse. Think about these two verses, and then next time we'll go into the fourth verse. Are there any questions? No questions? There's no confusion, right? It's okay not to have any questions, but don't have any confusion, please. Okay. All right. It'll get simpler now. Now, this first chapter, it'll go in the same lines. So it'll get a bit simpler. All right. No questions. Okay. Then we'll meet next Monday. We'll continue with this verse a little bit, and then we'll proceed further. Oh, so far, the word Brahman is not used. After this, he will start using the word Brahman. Okay. All right, so we'll close now. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnamidam.